recorded live at Corolla One Studios with Adam Carolla and board-certified physician and addiction medicine specialist, Dr. Drew Pinsky. You're listening to The Adam and Dr. Drew Show.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get on. I chose to become a man to get on. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for telling a friend. Right, Drew?
Yes.
So, last time I was in here, there was this gigantic new biography sitting in the on the coffee table by Ron Chernow about Ulysses Grant. And I was I was fascinated by it, and I asked the guys if I could take it and read it, and they abused me for attempting to read such – right? You were giving me shit.
No. Somebody said, why would you want – why would anyone want to read a book that big or something? But I don't remember. I can't remember exactly who that was. I know there was conversation. I know Dylan and Kalen were around.
There was a fair bit of ball busting.
Yeah.
I cannot put that goddamn book down.
Really?
It's really interesting. You would love it. If they come up with an audio version, you got to listen. He's the same guy that wrote Hamilton. And I like that biography, but I think I like this one better. Hamilton's obviously an extraordinary guy, but the Grant has so many crazy circumstances and things he went through, you know, just by serendipity. And it's a story about alcoholism writ large. And I don't think Chernow really understands what he's writing about, but he does a pretty good job of it.
I mean, Grant was an alcoholic.
Oh, man. Woo! Like Andy Dick-style alcoholic. But managed to stay sober most of the time. But when he'd go out, he would go out hard.
Oh, really?
Like really, like bad. And a lot of energy spent clearly during his day justifying, hiding, you know, making it okay, this kind of stuff, as opposed to going, oh, yeah, this guy cannot touch. He himself would say, I can't touch this stuff. I just can't do it. And yet it would start leaking in here and there the way it always does. And people would go, I've never seen the man drunk in my life. The man is stone sober. He's a you know, as though it's some sort of, again, a moral weakness or a statement of his overall character that he would lose control the way he would. And when he would get going, I was like Andy, like, oh boy.
What else did we learn about him?
I haven't got to the presidency yet, but I didn't understand the Western theater of war and the Civil War. I didn't understand what we were sort of doing there. And now I kind of get how that unfolded and why it did, and how profoundly involved he was in the Mexican American War. I didn't know during that war, and just a really interesting descriptions of battles he was involved in there, and also like an alcoholic, completely like into it when he's in battle, like doesn't care.
Right,
like, he's probably better, you know, less anxious when he's in battle, severe depressed when he didn't have anything to do. But I didn't realize we occupied Mexico City as part of that war. We occupied the entire country, essentially.
Did not know that either.
Isn't that crazy? I thought it all happened sort of in Texas and just a little south of there. Nope. He and his group just went all the way down to Mexico City, took it over.
Wow.
Yeah.
And what year were they in Mexico City? Do you know?
It had to be around 1850, maybe 52.
All right. Well.
But really, it's just such interesting history. And, you know, you really get a sense of why, you know, when all that land was usurped from Mexico – again, A, why they were able to get all that, because they occupied the whole country. And then, two, how it kind of caused the Civil War, because then all the Southerners wanted that to become slave territory.
I did not know that.
Yeah. And then the Kansas-Nebraska Act came in, and that was the end of that. The fugitives, you know, there's several different major important legislative and Supreme Court decisions that came together on the heels of that. All very super crazy political, and you know, you can't imagine the kind of decisions people were making at that time, but they did.
Well, Drew, you have a thirst for knowledge.
Yes, I do.
I like that about you.
Especially for some reason, this country, particularly our country, fascinates me.
Well, I agree, and that's convenient because you live here, and it's nice. It's really – that perspective is really an important part of being alive today. And I have the same thoughts mainly about sort of wars and things like that. But there's many people that just have zero interest in anything that happened before they were born.
Oh, man, you're missing out. Not just in terms of it being interesting, but in terms of – what's happening now and how we got here and what's important and what people were thinking.
Yeah, I like to file almost everything under narcissism, and that's one of those, I wasn't there, so
see,
how
to me it goes
could
under,
it be, or why would I want to know about it?
To me it goes under, we failed education. We failed these people in
well,
education.
Well, yeah, thus creating the narcissists who don't seem to care about anything but themselves.
Yeah.
I mean, if the definition of history is caring about something that doesn't involve you because you weren't there. Otherwise, it's not history. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, the very definition of it is has nothing to do with you.
I mean, how Grant drifted around. He was in the military for a while. Was set up in Oregon and then Northern California, and then just bailed out, and became a farmer, and then really could never make a living. He was like, he was destitute in his 30s, throughout his 30s, trying to raise two kids.
Which was pretty old back then.
Very old. And then the war breaks out, and he goes, you know, I think I could – I had some experience in the Mexican War. I think I could be put to good use here. And just boom, just comes on. It's also an example of, you know, how circumstance and abilities can kind of come together.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? There's the right man, right time.
I agree. John, 26, New York. John?
Yeah, hey, guys.
Hey, man, what's going on?
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
So, pretty recently, just a few days ago, as I'm calling you, one of my best friends, he's been having some problems drinking, and he's also my age, 26, and he got really drunk one night and called a suicide hotline, and, you know, cops came and took him. They took all his guns. He's a former Marine, so he's a little PTSD from that.
Yeah.
And so he's in inpatient right now. I've been talking to his sibling, and they told me he's not really into taking any visitors and kind of looking on advice for how to just sort of navigate this trauma in his life and do my duty as his friend to help him through it.
I didn't really see it as a trauma. I just see the progression of his alcoholism, and I see it as an opportunity. So speak freely, speak openly, don't pull any punches, do not walk on eggshells, and make sure he gets the alcoholism thoroughly treated and he keeps going in that treatment. And that he may need some antidepressants for a little while and make sure he follows the team's recommendations. But that really – he began to get really focused on alcoholism treatment.
Are the eggs out of the eggshells, Drew, when you walk on them?
I always wondered that. It doesn't really matter, I suppose. But I always envision them as out of the eggshells.
I envision them as out as well. Yeah. But then what difference does it make?
Doesn't make a difference.
Plots around.
One makes a bigger mess. You still break the eggshells either way.
Yeah.
I think it's because of the way I'm not saying don't walk on eggs. I'm saying don't walk on eggshells.
Yeah, it's I get it. That's the saying. It's just kind of interesting.
Yeah.
Hey, John.
Yeah.
All right. Well, you sound like a good friend.
Yeah, just bring openly and freely
and
be supportive.
Seems like he's getting the support and the help he needs.
Yeah, this is an opportunity. It really is.
All right. And so I've actually had this open and honest conversation with him before. And it was about a year and a half ago when I thought he wasn't acting like the same old buddy that I knew. And I had just said, look, man, I'm here as your friend. I think you should talk to somebody about whatever's going on in your head. And that's when he denied it. But
yeah, it'd be a little more direct than that. It's like, hey, clearly, man, you got a problem with alcohol. Let's go to the program. Let's go. Get a sponsor.
Okay.
Go do it. That's all.
All right.
It'd be very much more directive, and at some point you may have to say, "Hey, man, if you keep drinking, I cannot be around this." And leaving somebody often sometimes gets their attention. You got to do whatever you got to do to help him get motivated. That's the deal.
All right, here's Ron, 29, from Portland. Ron,
hey guys, how you doing?
Good. How you doing?
I'm doing pretty well. How are you? Oh, sorry.
That's all right.
So I got kind of a complicated situation here. My stepdad, who has been sort of abusive on and off in my life, is finally going to prison for selling heroin.
Nice.
And my mom, who is disabled from her job, is going to have maybe a year of monetary support where she can support herself. And
what does disabled from her job mean?
Yeah, what does that mean?
And I don't trust that.
Guys,
go ahead.
Guys, so she worked with mentally handicapped people, the retards, as you say.
Yes.
And one of them threw her up against a van, caused a bunch of fractures in her neck and her back. And another one of the disabled guys attacked that guy and got him off of her. And so since then, she's sort of been unable to work.
Why?
And or
why?
Addicted.
Oh, addicted to painkillers. Okay.
Addicted to painkillers.
All right. So that's.
Yeah. But first off, yeah. Drew, what a sad state of affairs when 50 years ago, if somebody said. 25 years ago, somebody said, oh, she was injured, he was injured in the workplace, and now he's in it. You'd be like, oh, my God, what happened?
I being fallen.
Somebody says to me, injured on the workplace, I start rolling my eyes before they...
I just hear my open
before,
addiction.
Yeah, before they... Well, no, for me, it's a two-stepper.
Yeah, yeah.
It's unable to work, injured on the workplace. That's me. That's when I begin my... Kabuki, no, my French farcical type movements where I play to the cheap seats in the background, like, yeah, okay, please, with the head roll. And then we go into the next part. Her T7 and T9 and her lumbar and she, her spinal, whatever. Now I go into, okay, addicted to pain pills.
Yeah. That's it.
Is there nobody who just gets hurt at work and legitimately and then goes home anymore? Like, is every time I hear a fucking story about somebody's injured at work and then somebody's hurt their back, it's like, oh, yeah.
You know what's really interesting? Listen to this. I had a really interesting experience with this with one of my patients. She's an addict. She's been in trouble on and off. She works very hard. It's trying to stay sober. Had a really serious injury at work. A car backed into her.
Belize.
Well, but hold on. So
Belize.
On and off painkillers, in and out of surgeries, and gets involved in a court case. And she's like, I need you. I need you to document that I can't work anywhere. I went. Finally, I was going down the path with the workers' comp people going, okay, well, I guess we got to. And then I thought, wait a minute. I've seen you the last couple months. You're getting around fine. What do you mean you can't work? I can't do that job. I go, why not? You love your work. Yeah, I love my work. They say I can't do it anymore. I go, why the hell not? You go back to work. She was stunned when I said that. They're so used to hearing doctors go, all right, we got to get this disability going. You need to take those painkillers. And I said, screw that. I can't document that you can't go back to work. Because if I've got it in the stand, you know what I'd say? She loves her work. She should be back next month. Next month, she's back at work. Her depression lifted. She's 1,000% better.
Thank you.
So
hero.
It's the system.
It's the system that does it too.
It's not
system
just the patient.
And all the enablers around everybody that doesn't tell everyone to get the hell to work.
Here's a system. True Car.
Ooh.
Shopping for a car, make sure you're getting real pricing on actual inventory. People can configure cars online only to find out that car not available. True Car, because it gives you real pricing on actual inventory, not pricing offered by True Car, but pricing from an actual True Car certified dealer. There have been over 3 million cars sold by over 13,000 True Car certified dealers nationwide, where you can expect to save an average. True Car users expect to save an average of over $3,000 off MSRP. That's right. When you're ready to buy, do what Max Pata did. Want to buy used or do what Corolla does, buy new. Whether you buy ready to buy new or used, all you got to do is visit True Car, see what others are paying. You look at that scattergram and you lock in a price on an actual vehicle on an actual True Car certified dealer's lot. And you'll know, you'll have confidence in what you're paying, that it's consistent with what's available in the community. You'll enjoy overall a more confident car buying experience. Some features not available in all states.
True Car, man.
True Car.
All right. So, Ron.
Yeah.
So, Ron, yeah, your mama can't work, but mama was with the junkie, and mama's got her own issues.
Yeah.
And her back is hurt because someone pushed her against a fan. I'm not sure.
Exactly.
All right. So,
I'm wondering, basically, it comes down to she has about a year's worth of money that she can get by on herself, according to the stepdad that caused all these problems, caused his own problems. And I don't know if I should move back home to try to support her financially or what I should do from here. There's a crazy number of other circumstances that come into play My sister has three kids that my mom has sort of been supporting on and off, and she's been addicted to heroin.
The sister.
Now my mom has custody of one of those kids, so it's just my mom and one of those kids and my stepdad that's about to go to jail. The other two.
Hold on, Ron, you white?
Yeah.
It's time to play the privilege card. You got to get the privilege card out. You're not playing
at least for the grandkids.
You got to play the white privilege. Well, what are you talking about? What do you mean?
There's
got to
be a boy in there.
It's all around you. It's ubiquitous.
There's the boy in the mix, by the way. My sister's boy has autism.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, which I think is sort of caused by her drug addiction, I'm assuming, at this point.
Oh. Yeah.
And that's the middle one. She's not taking care of the one with autism, by the way. That's with the one of the three dads. That's with his grandparents.
Jesus.
It's a crazy situation.
Yeah, of course.
I'm telling you, man.
I know.
But the reason I'm concerned is that I moved away from it's in Tulare. I'm sure you guys are aware. I moved away from Tulare because of all of these shithole problems that surround that area, and I wanted out of there. And I don't want to move back there to be back in that mess. Every time I go back there, I seep into a depression of having to deal with all of the problems and all the dramas they deal up. And I moved away to get away from that. And I'm concerned about my mom, but I don't want to go back because it's going to suck, personally.
Yeah. And Ron, I got to tell you, maybe this is part of me being an atheist, but and there's a provision for the kids because I do feel for the kids. But my thing is like, you fucking idiots, you made your shit bed and now you fucking die in it. I don't give a fuck.
That's how I feel.
Too bad.
Yeah,
you fucked up your fucking lives. You fucked up everyone's around you's lives. In a weird way, you've been the ultimate in selfish. And you're 60 years old. Like, when the fuck do you get your shit together? And at a certain point, I'm not going to follow you down the shithole. You've got your life. You don't look. I'm not saying you need to hang up when they call, and I'm not saying you don't need to do what you can do, but you don't need to put your life on hold. You're 29. You sound like you've extricated yourself from this, shit twister called your family, and
shit NATO, it's a new series.
And maybe this is a little cathartic for me, but I just feel like you fucking idiots. I will lend you my advice. I might even lend you a few bucks or whatever, but I'm not getting in there and fixing what you're unable to or unwilling to fix. So Ron, in my book, you're off the hook.
I am a little more sort of practical and sympathetic that maybe get some social worker in there to get your mom into some meetings, maybe get her some vocational rehabilitation and sort of get her out of the shit hole she's in, the shit NATO. She's got to get sober. She's got to get in the program. She has to start healing. It's free. 12-step is free, for God's sake. She can just show up and get support and start to crawl out of this hole, but she has to want to. And that's what Adam is frustrated by. People that they're not willing to make that move.
This people were like people, like when people hit me with, I don't have time to, but that doesn't mean anything to me. It never means anything to me. There is no such thing as you telling me I don't have time to do this on a weekend or take a class or do a thing or go to a meeting or something like that. There's no such thing as you telling me that ever makes me go, oh my God, I got to reexamine this.
I understand there's inertia to it, but once you start, you'll keep going.
Yeah, true. When someone tells you, I don't have time for, you fill in the blank. Do you ever go like, oh my God, I bet they don't have time.
I'm sympathetic to it, but there's certain things you've just got to, too bad.
But what is it that you need to do or want to do that you don't have time for? I'm not talking about read a good book. I'm talking about, like, in your life.
What do I not have time for?
Yeah, like, I'm saying, like, what historically, what have you not? I have time for everything I want to do. Well, that doesn't mean I get to do it all the time.
When it was time to go to therapy, I felt like, oh, am I going to do that? Once I started, I found time.
There you go. All right, let's see. Mom's going through depression, huh?
Sarah, line four.
Hey,
31, Connecticut. What's going on?
Well, I had a problem with alcohol for a couple of years. I
had trauma when you were 8.
Oh.
We haven't done that one in a long time.
Keep talking, let's see.
Maybe 9.
I don't think so, but...
Oh, yeah.
So I had a problem with alcohol. I had a trauma when I was 23.
Hold on, let's go back to the original trauma. What was your family of origin like?
My parents are married, and I have a younger sister, and they just dedicated their lives to raising us.
Hmm. So why do I feel like something happened when you were like 8 or 9? Did they have a rough spot, or did you have a tough experience or something when you were that age?
I was very shy. I don't think I really had any friends or really talked to anybody until I was, like, in high school. I was really sheltered.
Why? Kind of.
I don't know if I was sheltered, but I don't know. My parents were very overprotective. My mom especially is very overprotective.
Did she scare you with things, with stories she was telling?
I think so. I think I was kind of scared.
Like, what would she tell you?
Just, I don't know, anything. Like, I was just always scared that someone was going to, like, try to hurt me or poison me or...
Where'd you get that idea?
Poison?
I don't know. I don't know. I don't know.
Did your mom tell you those stories that someone was going to do that?
She's just always very careful.
Let me tell you the problem with all these fucking true crime shows.
Yeah.
Chicks are notoriously bad at math. And they watch all these true crime shows. It's all these shows, you know what I mean? The husband was having an affair, and he was plotting her death. And then the person pops up, and they goes, if it could happen here, it could happen anywhere. And then all the dingbat chicks go, I live anywhere. Holy shit, what's going on?
Yeah.
And then they give them, and because the math, they're not good at the actual statistical math.
Yeah.
The probabilities, they go... 50-50 chance going to happen to me? 80% chance going to happen to my daughter? Like, they're so worried about abductions and so worried about these things that statistically have no relevance at all. And they get them, man. And they suck them up. And they watch that shit all day. And then they leave the room and they go, hey, listen, sweetheart. You run to that mailbox serpentine. You don't go in a straight line. Because there'll be a van chasing you down the street trying to gobble you up and take you into the woods
poison you.
And it's like, no. As these cocked the fucking shows. And then the moms get all polluted. And then they start feeding the daughters this shit. Sarah?
Yeah.
Sorry, that was a little bit
So you never
cathartic.
Had any unpleasant experiences, like really intense experiences when you're late childhood?
Not that I can think of. Just the fact that I had, like, no friends and was very lonely and things like that.
Well, as your parents, are they a religion?
We grew up Catholic, but it wasn't, like, strict Catholic. We went to church every week, but...
They weren't abusing you with religion?
No, not at all.
All right. And what was the part where your mom was worried about you being poisoned?
I don't know. She was just very overprotective, I guess. I don't know.
Well, we weren't there. You have to be explicit with us what she did.
I don't... Something about poison. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. She was, I don't know. Like, I just...
I don't know is not an acceptable answer.
Right.
Because we certainly don't know. What did she do?
I don't know. Just, like, checking, like, seals on things. Like, if we... I don't know.
Oh, boy. There's nothing more attractive than people saying, I don't know... over and over and over again. It's like the fucking people that start every sentence with no, wait, you're saying what I'm I'm saying what you're saying. No, I know, I agree.
So what's the color of your shirt?
No. What?
I don't know. What's color of the shirt?
Gray? No. Like, stop yelling no. Like, with these fucking people. All right, Sarah.
Ugh. Okay.
You're driving.
I can't have anything.
All right. She's worried about things being tampered with because she watched one of those 48-hour specials where they got hold of the Tylenol or whatever.
Traumatized
probably
too,
something like that. I was just like general things like that. Like, I was scared of things like that. And I don't know.
Yeah,
if it came from her,
I know.
Or
it's
what.
It's a form of trauma to freak your kids out because you're fucking Dodo who watches these stupid TV shows.
So what,
Chris
so what
Hansen
happened?
On
what's
there.
The question?
Okay. So. My mom ended up getting my parents got custody of my son because I couldn't stay sober. So DCF transferred custody of my son when he was 8 months old to my parents.
Sober from what? Sober from what?
For me.
From what drug?
Oh, alcohol. Just alcohol. Okay. I was, like, drinking a lot. So
how old were you when you started drinking?
I was 18, my first year in college. Like, I just started drinking, and then when I graduated college and I got my first job, it was, like, very overwhelming for me, and I just, like, started drinking all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Just to, like, medicate myself.
Okay.
So, anyway, so then I started going to AA when I was 26. I got sober, and then I started talking to my mom about, like, wanting to get custody of my son back, and she just told me, she's like, oh, no, like, you're too poor. You can't provide for him. Like, me and your father can provide for him. We can give him a better life.
Who is the alcoholic in your family? Your parents?
My grandfather on my dad's side was an alcoholic, but he died before I was born.
And your dad never drank?
No, he drinks, but, like, never. I've never seen him drunk. But okay.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. All right.
So my mom said that, and then I was kind of just like, okay. So then I met a guy in AA. We got married, and then we had a son together. So now I have my son, who is 3, and I'm still going through this with my mom, where every once in a while I'll be like, hey, mom, like, do you think we can transfer custody of my older son back to me? And then she'll always come back with, oh, well, you're too poor, you work too much, you don't have time for him. And I don't know, like, maybe I should just, like, stop nagging her. Like, maybe I should, I don't know if he's better off with her.
She clearly thinks so.
How's she doing with him, and how's he doing?
I mean, I think she's doing fine. Like, she loves being a mom. Like, even with us, like, me and my sister, like, she's very dedicated to, like, being a mother and, like, raising children.
She's not convincing him he's going to get poisoned?
Halloween must be awesome. Just like, x-ray every piece of candy that comes through there. Sarah, all right, here we go. Let's see. Okay, first things first. How's the kid doing? That. I don't want to break up the thing. Yeah. Is she doing a good job? Is dad doing a good job?
Are you able to see the child and spend a little time with him? He knows his mom loves him.
Yeah, I can see him whenever I want. I can spend time with him whenever I want, but it's just...
Kids are insanely pliable, just sort of what is, you know what I mean? And this is what is.
If it's a more stable environment for him, he's got a good set of peers, he knows his mom's around, loves him, why monkey with that?
I agree. Yeah. I wouldn't. Hey, Mike, 47, New York.
Adam and Drew.
Yeah, man. What's going on?
Listening for a long time. Good to talk to you guys.
Good to talk to you. What's happening?
I have a 9-year-old boy. He's been diagnosed with OCD. You guys be perfect because we have your pragmatism with Drew's, you know, medical. And just wanted to get your thoughts.
OCD. Diagnosed. I feel when they did this fucking spectrum thing, they opened it up to any human being.
OCD is not a spectrum thing, though.
I feel like diagnose a lot of kids with OCD.
Well, I'd be very careful.
A lot of stuff that used to just be rambunctious or whatever we called it.
Well, that's obsessive defiance disorder. This is obsessive compulsive disorder.
Yeah, but don't they lay that handle on so many people now?
Well, what's he doing?
It was really more him having trouble in school.
Or am I thinking ADD?
You're thinking of ADD.
Right.
Yeah. But, basically was having trouble with, like, transitions and having meltdowns and stuff like that.
He's got to be institutionalized.
Yeah.
immediately. You have butterfly net?
Was he exposed to some unpleasant situations in the family there or something? Some chaos?
Not that I know of. He's pretty stable.
Is he biologically good his whole life? No medical problems?
No. He was good. You know, everything seemed fine.
And now he's having trouble with transitions.
Well, that was earlier. He's been in therapy for about 3 years.
Okay.
So... and that's what he was diagnosed with. And, you know, and part of me, you know, we bring him to therapy every week, and part of me, you know, kind of thinks it's bullshit. And then the other side of me just wants to, you know, do whatever I can for him.
What's
he do?
I still have no clear idea.
What is the most OCD-y thing he does?
I guess basically, you know, he does a lot of running back and forth through rooms, you know, like pacing.
Pacing
and running.
So does he rock and that sort of thing, or pull on his hair?
No, rocking or anything. You know, he'll kind of run back and forth, you know, through the house, and he just says he's got thoughts in his head. You know, that's like what he says. So.
Oh,
is he on medication?
No. We actually brought him to a psychiatrist for the therapist recommended, and they put him on methylfolate. She said to try that before. We moved on to any medication.
Wait, another good example of when you said is he on medication? No. He went to a psychiatrist.
Yeah, like, look, it
and
sounds...
But why wouldn't you keep seeing a therapist? I mean, I wish somebody sent me to a therapist early on.
Me too.
Yeah,
I mean,
why
not? Me, Drew, but yeah. I got
to
work with him.
But they're just trying to, you know, milk me for money as part of my my thoughts. But like I said, I don't want to be a bad parent either.
If the child's having overwhelming thoughts that are troubling him... You know, to the point where he's having to physically maneuver and act out compulsively, I would keep that kid in some kind of therapy at least.
I would too. Hold on. Jamie, Sacramento.
Yes. Hi, guys. How are you?
Hold on 1 second. We'll finish up with you first. I'll tell you about Nightstand. NYTSTND, man.
Love this.
If you got yourself an iPhone or the AirPods, I got these things. I love these things. iPad, at the end of the day, everything needs to be charged up. It's all a mess. It's all over the place. You know me. I love this stuff because I love organization. Nightstands, a charging station that charges up to 9 devices at the same time. No stacking devices, protecting your screens from scratching. It's just ingenious. Optional wireless charger works with any iPhone 8 or 8 Plus and the iPhone X, compatible Android smartphones. Not some big Chinese company. No, that's right. Started out on Etsy. It's made in America. 2-day free shipping, everybody. Prepare for the Christmas sale. It's coming up. Our listeners get 15% off. Ooh, 15% off any order over $80 by entering the promo code ADS at checkout. So go to NYTSTND.com. for the perfect gift and get the 10% off. Use the promo code ADS. These guys are fans and they make a great product. I got on my nightstand. All right, let's go. Last but not least, Jamie.
Hey guys, first time, long time.
Thanks, man. What's going on?
So my family's got a number of issues, anxiety, depression, addiction. And my mom is going through her third or fourth round of depression. And she grew up in a family that owned bars and restaurants and kind of glorified cocktail hour. And so ever since growing up, it was, you know, as soon as she got home from work, it was, had to have that martini. It wasn't anything mixed. It was just straight gin. And that was her routine. And, excuse me, I'm a little nervous. So now that she's gone through her depression again, I went through a depression a few years ago. I was raped when I was 21. It took me 6 years to finally get some help. And I got to the point of having a suicide plan, and that's what kind of pushed me to tell the family what was going on. So
what, it's 2017, I have to ask, does rape mean violently raped by strangers? It mean Al Franken took a picture with you? Like, I don't know anymore since the definition of rape is now completely blown out.
Yeah.
So what?
No, this is like the definition of rape. I know, like, I listen to all your podcasts, and this is not like somebody honked my boob kind of a thing. This
right.
was like.
But this is why I don't like everything turning into rape, because there's people that were violently raped, and that's a different situation than Cop to Feel by George Bush, and I just want to know the difference. That's all. Call me insensitive.
Yeah, I mean, all not to piss you off on the spectrum thing, but it was at the far end of it. So
The violent end of it.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
So when I was going through my stuff, you know, mom and dad were very supportive and encouraged me to talk. I went to therapy. I was on antidepressants for a while and, you know, did the cognitive behavioral therapy. And Drew, that was you were a big part of that. I listened to you guys and that definitely kind of shot me in the right direction.
Excellent.
But mom is going through her stuff. And while she's going through this, she always is lamenting about, well, you know, it's 5 o'clock. I can't have my cocktail. I can't have my cocktail because she's back on the antidepressant.
Right. So, she's also an alcoholic. And so people that are alcoholic, when they lose their drink, they frequently get depressed and or anxious unless they replace the alcohol with some process, therapy, 12 steps, something. So she has to get a little more realistic about what she's dealing with, not just depression. Depression and alcoholism, and just treating the depression is usually totally inadequate in terms of a full recovery. So it's, does she interested in going to 12-step, or would she like to see a therapist? Something of that order would really be a necessary step here.
All right. If you'd like some show merch, maybe a hat, maybe a mug, maybe our buck slips, our ACS branded buck slips.
Nice. I love them.
File this under the 20-minute discussion I had with my stepdad about using buck slips instead of a slip of crinkled up papers. I saw them too much, so I pulled out the crinkled papers. File this under the God owes me a whole nother life to live where I give no one about anything.
They all magically comply?
No.
You just stop doing it.
I just have a new life where I come back as a person that doesn't tell anyone anything that they can ignore. It'll be awesome. So go to Corolla Drinks and say hi to Lynette over there. What do you got, Drewski?
GoDoctor.com or the Facebook page for the Family of Pods. Please check it out.
So until next time, Adam Corolla for Dr. Drew saying mahalo.